one of the things that I keep trying to, convince club owners of, that, if they're doing blues music, the blues audience is they're 45 and up now. There's not a whole lot of young people coming to hear this kind of music anymore. I mean, we've fallen into that situation. And I keep trying to tell these club owners, start your stuff. If you're doing blues stuff, start it early. You stand a better chance of getting a better crowd because, these folks are getting a little bit older. They drink responsibly. They go home and behave themselves. And
we've
they
got
to
kids.
Go to bed,
yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. It's just kind of the way it is. So.
No doubt. So do you find yourself about once every year just sitting down and writing a bunch of songs?
I do. I have come to the conclusion that, because of the economy and gas prices and various other things and the fact that I'm not as young as I used to be either, that touring in the wintertime tends to be financially just not that great a deal.
Huh.
You're not hitting the festivals, and because the festivals are generally outside.
Sure.
Except, for Europe does a lot of festivals in the wintertime in buildings. But
wow.
I don't know. That doesn't sound like a festival to me. But so in this country, I pretty much, once the holidays get here, I pretty much pull up and stop until early spring. And that's a good thing because it affords me the opportunity to sit around here and write songs and do some other projects with some other players like Earl Cate and his band.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
That kind of stuff, and get some new material together and record it, and then, put a little more thought into it than I would normally. It's really hard to be somebody who tours 300 nights a year, and I've done this for many years, toured 300 nights a year, and then the record company wants you to quick run in the studio and make a new album because they've run out of beans to count.
Huh.
Well, so then you're kind of going, I haven't really thought about any new songs in a while. So you end up in the studio pulling songs out of nowhere, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not so good. So this kind of affords me the opportunity to sit down and really concentrate on the material and get something I really like together and make a stronger record,
I don't notice any but really one that's Hang Up and Drive that's from a previous album. Do you have any others that are from previous albums that you just kind of resurrected?
Well, there is a live version of Bomb the Moon on the last live album that we did before this one.
Right.
But I don't like that version as much as I like the studio version on the newer one. So.
Good deal.
But yeah, Hang Up and Drive was, that was a real old song that I came up with on the second album back in 94 or so, I'm going to say, who's working with Jim Gaines. And
okay.
We had finished, or thought we had finished, the album Trouble Man. And then Jim counted up all the time, and he said, hey, man, we're like one song short to make this thing balance out right. And I just said, I tell you what, just hit the record button. And he just looked at me really funny, and he said, what are you talking about? And I said, I'll show you. And I just counted that song off and just made it up on the spot. And there was a different rhythm section back then, and I thought, it worked once. Let's see if it'll work again. So here's two other guys that are totally deer caught in the headlights. I said, hit the record button, and started the song, and the exact same result happened. So I thought, why not? Let's put it out again.
There was a time when you were known as the Wild Man of the Blues.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you still resemble that remark?
No. No. As I say, a little more long in the tooth, and, actually, I was one of the very first people, if not the first guy, to actually own a wireless guitar.
Okay.
Now, when they first came out, they were extremely expensive. They were about $3,000.
Wow.
And they were reconditioned old Advent tuners with a little broadcast pod that you wore on your belt.
Yeah.
Well, I began to have more fun with that thing, running through crowds and kicking people's drinks over. And, at some point you begin to, kind of sober up and realize that about the fourth or fifth time you stand up on a bar, you know, to duck walk, and a ceiling fan hits you in the head, you know, you start going, you start rethinking this whole thing. And honestly, you know, pretty soon I saw that everybody who saw me do that stuff, the next time I saw them, they had a wireless guitar, too.
Uh-huh.
Funny thing about that. Well, years went by with that stuff, and I began to realize after I had jumped off a stage in the Virgin Islands at a blues festival and broken my heel into grape nuts, I began to realize that these wireless guitars were responsible for about 90% of the physical injury that I had sustained in my career. I promptly threw that thing in the dumpster, and I pretty well stay tethered to an amplifier now. I figure, you know, you can be in the circus or you can be in the symphony. It's up to you. But I just felt like I think I ought to try to get people's attention by playing rather than by running around kicking their $7 drink over.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I do now. I'm not really a wild man any longer.
Well, you know, the plane is, it's still superb. That hasn't changed at all. But
no, actually, I'm quite sure it's gotten better. You know, that's the other thing is when you're busy being a hot dog, you're really not concentrating that much on what you're playing. And the fact of the matter is you may be driving a crowd crazy with your antics, but if you listen to that same song recorded and listen to it back, the playing isn't all that great. The antics are great, you know. And
which don't really show up on CD.
They don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. I have to ask you a question about this last album. I was reading the thank yous,
uh-huh.
And you have a special thanks to Mark Knopfler.
Yes.
And he says, my sincere apologies.
Uh-huh.
Is there a story to that?
Only that the particular tune that is referring to is one called Wannabe, which I when I got the idea to write the song, I kept running into some difficulty figuring out what the format would be, and I finally just realized that the best way to write a song about wannabes is to do what wannabes do, which is just blatantly steal from someone else. So I just blatantly stole some Mark Knopfler stuff and wrote the song within those parameters.
Interesting.
It's my little tip of the hat to there's a lot of wannabes in our business.
Yeah.
And as Bob Margolin, my dear friend, once said, there's an awful lot of mediocrity in our business.
Yeah.
And fortunately, for the most part, the cream rises to the top. But there's always those people in the lower echelons that are willing to do almost anything to live vicariously through someone else's success. And you know, you get to a point where, you know, some mornings it just really grates on you. And I got up one morning and I had just had about enough of it. So I basically took the money for nothing treatment and just wrote that tune. So I felt that I should at least apologize to Mr. Knopfler for just blatantly ripping him off. He hasn't contacted me with a lawsuit yet, so I guess I'm in the clear.
It's still early.
It's still early.